AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Well, you're very welcome to another Confessions podcast. I knew something must be afoot, by the way, when I found a discarded wine bottle in the vestibule. Returning to her missionary work, that's the noise from the West Country of Sister Susie. She's back on the podcast.
Hello.
That was very gentle. I think you should step back in with authority, confidence, and a certain assertiveness. So
okay,
we welcome
hello.
Back Sister Susie to the podcast.
Hello. Is that better?
That is much better.
Is that okay?
We don't want to be bellowing down there.
No.
You know.
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
Anyway, on with the service for this week. Coming up, more of your messages on the parish notice board. Another classic confession from the crypt, and of course, all the confessions from this week on the Drive Time Show from Greatest Hits Radio, including Matt's tale of deception, get out your lazy bed, an important warning for anyone listening to this via rediffusion on a cathode ray tube television set. We're back at St. Custard's for Sid's story, Worry Worry Super Scurry. Master Chief's confession, let the boys all sing, let the boys all shout for tomorrow.
Yeah.
First up, Eric's slimy story, The Big Bad Wolf.
Simon Mayo's confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Tonight's confession comes from Eric. It's not a great one if you're eating.
Oh.
That's all I'm saying. Thought you welcome you back in style, Sister Susie.
Thanks.
Dear Simon and the Munificent Massive, the story I relate here, and for which I humbly beg your forgiveness, happened in the recent past. To be honest, it happened this last weekend.
Okay.
Which is very recent. Because some of these are like 50 years old. Before I continue, I must warn you and your listeners that it is a story best not heard at mealtimes. Well, it's going out at this time, so...
Okay.
Anyway. My good lady wife, let's call her Marge, not her real name, had invited a friend of hers to join us for Sunday lunch. As was customary on such occasions, my wife then formulated a plan as to what meal she would be preparing. She's not one to buy in ready-made products. She insists everything must be made by her own fair hands. I must now explain that my wife is of an extremely focused disposition. By this I mean that once she's decided on something, that is what it will be, come hell or high water. The concept of Plan B does not, nor has it ever, featured in her thought processes. I think there's decades of experience coming out in Eric's prose. She had decided to make a chicken pie with accompanying vegetables, this to be followed by a fluffy jelly. Her description, not mine, fluffy jelly with ice cream.
Ooh. Lovely.
All be explained about how you fluff a jelly. All went well with the creation of the chicken pie. This was fortunately done whilst I was at the football on Saturday, so I managed to escape the house during its preparation. Having experienced the traumas and tantrums when things haven't gone exactly as planned, I was mightily pleased about this. My joy was, however, cut short on my return when I was informed that I was to assist her in making the fluffy jelly. The process was that after she had made the jelly by melting the cubes in hot water and leaving them to cool slightly, I was to pour this slowly into a bowl of evaporated milk while she was whisking it frantically. I was duly summoned to perform my duties. Where is the jelly, I asked. Out in your workshop, where it's cold, was the snapped reply. I went out to my workshop and I found it. Unfortunately, this is where things turned a bit nasty, as I wasn't the first to find it. Some slugs had managed to find their way into the bowl and appeared to have their heads.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it was their heads in the jelly, but it could have been. It could have been the other way.
Backing into the jelly.
They could have been.
Right.
Reverse.
Okay.
Yes. If you're a slug, you might want to do that.
Reverse.
Just like, would a slug reverse or go head first? I don't know. Well, Simon, I can't lie. Blind panic set in. I knew if I told Marge, she would insist that the jelly was thrown away and this would be followed by barked instructions that I should head out to the supermarket and purchase replacement jelly cubes. Unfortunately, having consumed a few beers at the football and a large glass of vino on my return, I was in no condition to drive. This would leave her with no dessert to offer. Any suggestion of my heading out in the morning to buy something else would have meant that she would wake me every half hour during the night fretting about what to do. Trust me, Simon, I had been there before and this was not something I wished to repeat. So I took the only step my fevered brain could come up with. I hooked the slugs out of the jelly bowl and threw them in the bin. Apologies to the Slug Protection League, if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
I then returned to the kitchen saying nothing about the slugs and proceeded to pour the jelly into the evaporated milk. Sunday arrived and the meal went well and the pie was delicious. When dessert was served, it looked lovely and was received by our guests very well. I had hoped to decline any of my portion, but I had to, so I steeled myself and tucked in. I'm sure it was just my imagination, but honestly, it did seem to have a strange, slimy texture. Which is not surprising, given the number of slugs.
Yeah.
Our guests survived the experience, although what the long-term effects might be, who can say, because this has just happened. So
Right.
If it was Sunday lunch, okay. This was literally yesterday. So, Simon, I throw myself on your mercy and beg forgiveness, please, from your good selves and also from our guest. Everyone has remained nameless, but that is Eric who sends in today's confession. Slugs in the jelly is not something that you would mess around with, I don't think, because slugs have a little kind of a squirmy, slimy consistency, which they clearly will leave behind. And so I'm not sure this is going to go very well as far as Sister Susie's debut return is going to... What do you say?
Well, I've got a few things here, Eric.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't his fault. She put it in the workshop. His wife, Marge, put it in the workshop. He could have gone immediately in and gone, hang on a minute, there's some slugs in here. And I guess it comes down to the fact that he didn't want the effort to go through and make another jelly. Now, that should really have been Marge's decision and not Eric.
Right.
And I just don't think I can forgive him for not bringing it up. Fair play to him, he ate it. So, you know, he did well.
It sounds absolutely disgusting.
Rather
from another
gutter. It does sound foul. But that said, as Suze points out, she was the one that left the jelly out. And if you don't want to have slugs in your jelly, don't put your jelly out where the slugs are in the study. And also, does it really matter where the slugs are in the jelly? I don't think so. I think it's perfectly fine. Also, she was already whipping up the coronation chicken, or whatever it was, the cream stuff. Anyway, she was already whipping that up. And once you've started that, you can't stop. So you've got to pour in your jelly, slugs and all. So
It
is nature, circle of life. For that reason, going to forgive.
Circle of life, certainly if the guest doesn't make it to next weekend.
Yes, let's hope so.
Of slug
fingers
poisoning.
Yeah.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Just as incoherent as ever, by the way, Matt.
Yeah.
On a beer note, in your pub, Susie, do you sell the Mexican beer that you put grubs in? Because that's the same kind of principle. If you have grubs in a beer, why don't you have slugs in the jelly?
No, it's not the same thing. We don't actually sell that beer that has slugs in it. Or tequila. You can get worms in tequila.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. Tequila, yeah.
Tequila.
Yeah, and the beer has got, I think it's got tequila in it, so therefore might have some worms
Ridiculous.
In it. But no, it's not the same. They're special, like, beer grubs rather than...
What? Hang on.
I know, I'm laughing at myself as I'm saying this. But it's not the same as a slug from the workshop, is what I'm saying.
If the good Lord had intended us to drink slugs in beer, he would have made them swim in beer naturally.
But they do swim in beer.
They don't.
Have you ever seen a grub in beer?
They get a grub, they shove it in, the grub drowns in beer.
Oh, well, I mean, when it drowns, then it sinks to the bottom. But whilst it's alive, it's...
It's wrong and cruel.
It's swimming in the beer. Yep. It's very much.
How do we get there?
Very much how it works. On the subject of Eric's fluffy jelly, Mary in Redditch sent us this. Hi, Simon. My mother used to make that pudding with evaporated milk, tinned mandarin oranges, and an orange jelly. It was perfect as a quick pudding from the store cupboard. However, she called it Fluffy Fanny. My mum and dad used to delight in embarrassing my sister's boyfriends by asking them if they'd like to try some Fluffy Fanny. Danny. I think they'd seen too many Carry On films. Best wishes, Mary, Wooly and Redditch. For keen listeners, we already know what the secret code phrase is going to be at the end of this podcast.
My social media feed will be awash with pornography.
Oh, I think so.
See, I'd never thought that there are confessions that come from the crypt, and there's some stuff that we wouldn't broadcast, but we don't normally get correspondence that we wouldn't broadcast. So that wouldn't make it onto the radio.
Definitely wouldn't. No.
Why would it? I mean, what a terrible name. I mean, Fluffy Jelly was a terrible name anyway.
Yes. I mean, it's of a different age, isn't it? It was perfectly fine.
Is that right?
50 years ago, you know.
Right, let's turn to the parish notice board, see if there's anything a bit more respectable there. Don't forget, this is your bit. Anything that you want to share with us, emails, tweets, reviews, that kind of thing, confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
And I'm pleased to say that we've had another flood of five-star reviews on last week's service.
It's so, not as though we even asked for them.
No, it's not as though we're desperate at all. Lena Caroline says, 5 stars, hilarious as ever. Brightens my Friday every week. I find these stories so very funny. They inspire me to be more human and maybe sometimes ever so rarely do things that are more fun than correct. Keep the laughs coming. Carling SM says 5 stars. Happy for the return of this podcast. Since listening to the confessions on the breakfast show on the other station, I've been hooked. So glad that these have returned. A great listen. And Rob Swanee 350, 5 stars. Welcome back. So happy that the podcast is back. I finish work at 6 o'clock, so I miss them live. Having the podcast on while washing up makes a chore a pleasure. Matt for Prime Minister. Oh, well done, Rob. Definitely.
What?
If you're if you're saying that I should have elected office, you're definitely getting your 5-star review read out, by the way. Remember to add your 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. You might find yourself on the parish notice board next week, but only if it's 5 stars and calling for me to have elected office.
Why would anybody want you to be Prime Minister?
I think we all know why.
Why?
Because of my policy on grubs.
Is that right?
Yeah.
On that, the grubs live on the agave plant that the tequila comes from. So.
Yes. Yeah,
that's not an excuse for drowning them in beer, though, is it?
No, it isn't.
Drowning, but they're swimming in the beer. They swim in the beer and then they drown.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly the same point that I'm making.
No.
A beer is there to be drunk. It's a cold drink. You have it in a glass. The grubs are in the ground. It's the way the good Lord intended the world to be.
Late breaking news on the parish notice board. Mary in Bonnie Stirlingshire says, "Dear Simon, can I offer some late forgiveness for Dora the Explorer on last week's podcast? As someone who ended up in Switzerland with a passport by mistake, we all remember that one. I was staying in France near the Swiss border and on a day's picnic outing took a wrong turn down a country lane and ended up in Switzerland. Easily done. Who hasn't accidentally wandered into the wrong country?"
Most people Yes,
I think I've probably done
have
it
you?
At once. Yeah.
Susie, have you ever wandered into the wrong country?
No, not that I know. Where I'm from is actually very close to the border between Wales and England, so you know, maybe coming home one night I might have stumbled across, but that'd be it.
You could have been half in Wales and half in England.
I could, yeah.
Matt from Rugby. "Father Simon and gang, welcome back. I feel there should have been a bigger fanfare for your return, as I almost missed that you were back. A big thank you to you and the powers that be for making this happen, and long may these continue. I originally discovered your show on the radio driving home from work several years ago and have enjoyed listening ever since." Well, with a small break.
Yeah.
"I've introduced my dad, brothers, wife and children to your podcast, and we each enjoy listening to them. It especially makes long journeys much more acceptable. By the way, if you do convert someone to this podcast, can you send us proof of that? Like, take a photograph, send us proof of the fact that there's you're listening and here's your new convert that's listening. And if you do that, then we will say thank you on, you know."
Yes, we definitely will.
Anyway, "I'm especially excited to hear that you are resurrecting Confessions from the Crypt. One that really tickled me in the past involved donating an animal to a local zoo or animal sanctuary, thinking it would be going to a better home, but then subsequently realising after donating it that the place was not interested in receiving the animal to look after it, but rather to use it to help look after some of their more carnivorous animals."
Really?
Right. It was going to be food.
There's Billy the hamster. Oh, dear.
"Lend us your dog."
No!
"The icing on the top was when they commented that they would still visit that same place with fellow family members, trying to look for it and having to lie, 'Oh, it It was there. You just missed
gone
it.
Gone in for a sleep. Yeah.
I was gutted this one was not dug out before and thought I had missed my chance forever. But now you're back, I'm really hoping this one makes it this time, as it was excellent. I have to say, this is a long time ago. I actually don't remember reading that one.
I was going to say, that doesn't
to
sound
be
familiar.
Way, way back, yeah, that one.
Yeah. Because,
I don't remember that
right,
one.
Right, so Matt from Rugby is suggesting that... So the zoo was saying, we'll look after your animal. And then he said, OK, have my donkey. And then they feed it to the crocodiles.
I don't think they're allowed to do that
It wouldn't
anymore.
Have been a donkey.
Anyway.
Yeah. A donkey. You feed that to the crocodiles. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you for all the correspondence. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Quick few mentions for me so far. Andrew Richardson, Matt Cherry, Joe Lynn, Julie Lee, Stephen Hill and Stuart Gillingham. Amongst those who tweeted the secret phrase from last week's podcast, which was, of course, online snuff. Keep listening through to the end of this podcast to pick up this week's secret code phrase, yeah. Even though I think
we all know what it is.
We all know
what it's going to be. Right, a quick trawl through the gutter, although to be honest, it feels as though
we're knee deep in it.
Yeah.
Already.
The confessions that ended up in the file marked not for broadcast due to the various and assorted rules of Tea Time Radio. Neil, who as a six-year-old decided a good way to monitor how many times he used the loo would be to mark the wall in the bathroom with a bogey.
Oh, I thought that was going to be with...
Go on!
It wasn't long before the wall had a long string of bogeys, and naturally Dad was on the hunt to find the culprit. As neither Neil or his brother owned up, Dad's plan was to count up the bogeys and monitor who went in and out of the bathroom.
Genius.
Taking the opportunity of Dad's workmate visiting the house, Neil sneaked into the bathroom and added a big bogey to the wall, leading his dad to have serious words with his colleague. I mean, I know why that wasn't allowed on, but it was.
I don't know. I mean, I think I think that's okay.
Would that have been okay, Susan?
Bogeys, no.
That's
no
so good.
To be honest, that's a lot time. Of bogeys at Tito. There's an awful lot. It's not just. Oh, there's just one and we can excuse it.
Yes.
That's a string.
A whole variety.
I love the fact that the dad has decided the way to solve this is to count up the bogeys. And that will lead me down the line of working out what's been going on.
So that didn't make it
no.
on. Thank you, Neil.
Yes.
And Tom, who, while working in a charity shop, accepted a kind donation from a lady whose elderly cat, Maisie, had sadly passed away. One of the items was an old cat bowl with the name Maisie inscribed on the front. Tom scraped off the crusty remnants of cat food and placed it on the cash desk, intending to give it a good clean later. Unfortunately, before he got the chance, an eager customer was ready to buy it. Making small talk, Tom asked the customer if she had a cat called Maisie. No, she replied, my granddaughter is called Maisie and she's going to have this as a breakfast bowl.
Ooh, lovely.
And Tom said nothing. Again, I think that's kind of acceptable.
I think it's fine. Yeah. I mean, you don't buy something and then not wash it, do you?
So I'm shocked to find it in the not-for-broadcast section.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, Susie represents the centrist mum. So if Susie thinks...
feed my baby a food out of a bowl that's been used for cat food.
There you go. That's what we wanted to hear. So thank you very much. So, you know, if you send in a podcast that's terrible, it may well end up in this particular section of the podcast. Tom and Neil, thank you very much. Let's get back to the confession that did make it onto the radio with Sid's story, Worry Worry Super Scurry.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
Thank you. Okay, so today's confession originally was a 12 certificate, but I've wrestled it down to a PG.
Oh, right.
And it comes from Sid.
Okay.
Simon of the Forgiving Collective. My confession takes us back to the turn of the millennium when I had a part-time maintenance job at St. Custard's Preparatory School in Leafy, Warwickshire. This school was in a large... We haven't been at St. Custard's for a while.
No, we haven't,
actually. So it's nice to go back. This school was in a large Victorian building. It was a surreal place to work, not only due to the architecture of the school, but because the headmaster, Grimes, obviously, was the spitting image of Basil Fawlty. Leading up to Christmas in 1999, the school music teacher, Mrs. Golding, thought it would be a good idea and in festive spirit to decorate the school library with coloured balloons blown up by the children in her woodwind section. These balloons were all round, but different sizes due to the varying lung capacity of the 10 to 11-year-old pupils and were placed all around the top of the bookcases. Each balloon had the same message, written on in black marker pen, stating the child's name. For example, Theobald's breath or Tilly's breath and so on. However, I noticed that strategically placed on the bookcase behind the librarian's desk, there was a very large pink balloon with the words Mrs. Golding's breath written on it, and my mind went into mode. Now, I'd had dastardly thought and questioned myself as to whether or not Mrs. Golding would appreciate my intended prank. I knew she had a very good sense of humour because a few weeks previous, whilst retrieving the Christmas decorations from the huge attic, I was walking along a loose floorboard and I stepped on the end of this board that was overhanging the ceiling joist. And like a scene reminiscent of a Laurel and Hardy film, the other end of the board rose up and hit me in the face and my size 9 steel toe cap boot followed by my right leg went straight through the ceiling and the soundproofing of the acoustic music room below. My fall was curtailed only by my gentleman's area colliding with the ceiling joist. Once I had retrieved my right leg and got my breath back, as only the gentleman listening will understand, I peered down through the gaping hole that I had created and I saw a 10-year-old violinist in complete shock and bewilderment still trying to play, like the scene in Titanic, as her music teacher, Mrs. Golding, in complete hysterics, instructed me in her posh Surrey accent, "Patch it up in your launch hour and nobody will notice." So there you go. That's top medical advice there from Mrs. Thanks. Golding. Yeah. So from her reaction, I was certain that she would see the funny side of my intended jolly jape in the library. Will everyone else, however? Later that evening, whilst locking up the school alone, I entered the library and my eyes were immediately drawn to Mrs. Golding's large pink balloon. I tiptoed behind the librarian's desk and opened each of the drawers, and sure enough, there in the bottom drawer was an open bag containing the remaining balloons. I couldn't help myself, Father Simon. My hand dipped into the cellophane bag, and I started to imagine it was the burgundy velvet bag at FA headquarters, and I was Rio Ferdinand, choosing the balls in an FA Cup drawer.
Of course.
But that's where the similarity ended, because I kept replacing the balloons back into the bag until I pulled out a pink balloon to match the one above my head containing the exasperated breath of Mrs. Golding. Whilst giggling profusely, I duly inflated the balloon to around the same size as the other one, and I attached my balloon adjacent to Mrs. Golding's one. And this is where it got out of hand. Using the librarian's black marker from the top drawer, I altered the message across the two pink balloons. So you'll remember it had read Mrs. Golding's breath.
Yeah.
Well, I removed the H and I added an S and then another S.
Okay.
In fits of guilt-ridden laughter, ask your parents, I locked up the school, and over the next few weeks leading up to Christmas, the least that I expected was for my illicit balloon to be removed, or worst-case scenario, to be called into the headmaster Grimes' office, Basil Fawlty, you'll remember, to initiate my instant dismissal. But fortunately, neither of these happened. So, Father Simon and team, I beg your forgiveness not only to the music teacher for childishly imitating biology, or to the and anatomy, or to the young violinist who was probably too traumatized to ever take up a musical instrument for the rest of her life, but obviously from the poor Basil Fawlty lookalike Headmaster Grimes, who up until his retirement never ever found out why he had a gaping hole in his music room and the acoustic ceiling being ruined. Your verdict would be appreciated. From Sid, now in Devon. Okay, well, there's some interesting tales going on there, I think. I think I suitably
made
that.
No, I think we're all there.
It wasn't...
Very well done.
It wasn't too seaside...
No.
...bawdy humour. End of the pier. Anyway, Susie is the voice of responsibility and respectability always. What do you say?
Yes, Sid. I don't know what to think here. You know, there was no malice. You know, no one was harmed. However, I do think it was very, very childish. And in fact, I would expect better of someone who worked at a school. Mm. You know, it's very childish behaviour. And I feel like you did deserve to, you know, injure your gentleman area for a little bit, because that was just silly and it wasn't needed. So there you go.
So your punishment.
It's deserved to have his gentleman area.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, brother from another guy.
How very dare he be walking along and, you know,
in
fall
his size
through
nines,
the...
Yes.
Fall through the
poor
ceiling.
Child.
Yes. I mean, it's not his fault, the architecture at St. Custard's, is it? It's not down to him. It turns out, you know, being walking along and all of that happens, and that's not fair at all. And also, it's very funny, the thing with the pink balloons and the Mrs. Golding's
breath. Was it though?
So very careful how I said that. So yes, for that reason, I'm going to forgive before I get into trouble. Yeah.
Yes, recovered just at the last minute there.
So
you're going to undo all my careful handiwork.
Yeah.
I have to say, I toned that one down quite a lot.
Yeah.
And ran it past Susie, and Susie
taken
said,
all
you
of
know,
that
said
out.
Went fine. Through all the lawyers, then, didn't it, that one? Yeah, quite
well,
right.
Well, there was also an extra word. There was also the word large.
Yes. Okay, right. Well,
written on
obviously,
the balloon.
And
I just thought, you know, let's
no
let's
need,
keep
no
up
need.
Some standards. But on this podcast, there are very few, it seems. Still to come, we find ourselves striking a pose in Italy for Bernard's confession from the crypt. Everybody must say cheese, cheese. Matty's tale, get out your lazy bed. And next, Master Chief's confession. Let the boys all sing, let the boys all shout for tomorrow. Doo-loo-loo.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Tonight's confession comes from Master Chief. That's how it's signed. Thank you, Master Chief.
Okay.
Your Holiness and Archbishops Matt and Susie, due to a big birthday recently coming to pass, I feel enough time has passed to finally confess my school days transgression. I humbly acknowledge that in hindsight, my actions were ill-considered and potentially dangerous.
Okay.
And that is a correct...
Not forgiven.
Description.
Yes.
And so to the tale. Back in the 80s, the school I attended had a cadet force. I mean, I was a part of, because I had to be, and as such, we, the cadets, would go on trips and camps. On this particular occasion, whilst attending an army camp for a week, we went potholing. Yes, it's a potholing confession.
Wow.
There was a group... I don't think we've had one before.
No, for good reason.
There was a group of about 10 with a professional potholer and a couple of officers, otherwise known as the French and geography teacher. Anyway, we're all kitted out with miners' helmets and lights with a battery pack the size of two bricks around our waist, and off we went. This group of lads, fun guys we were, had within it a pair. This group of lads had within it a pair of what can only be described in polite society as a bully.
Oh, right.
And his equally annoying sidekick. This pair were bigger than the rest of us and took great delight in poking unkind fun at anybody that did anything that may catch their unwanted attention. They would also hide other people's gear for parades to get them into trouble and be particularly unkind to the larger, rounder group members when it came to physical activity. This pair had vexed me due to the aforementioned hiding of kit, which earned me press-ups in a puddle from the sergeant on parade. Meaning dirty parade kit that needed washing and ironing, as well as the embarrassment of completing 20 push-ups in front of the entire troop in a puddle. I had, in fact, had enough of these guys.
Had enough, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So to set the scene, imagine, if you will, a large open cavern about half a mile into the cave complex. There is a natural pool in a cave floor about 15 feet across and, according to the guide, deep and cold. The water was due to a hole about 1 meter wide in the ceiling of the cave, as well as the naturally occurring water within the cave system. We had come to a stop to regroup on a natural platform about 10 feet above the pool and about the same distance under the ceiling. The platform was just wide enough for us all to congregate on whilst the guide checked that everyone was present. Now, as I waited, I noticed that there was an almost perfectly smooth, natural stone slide from where we stood into the pool. And who should be standing mere inches from the edge but the bully boys?
Yeah.
My plan formed in seconds. We were tightly grouped, so I made my way carefully and unnoticed to the safe side of where my victims, I mean troop mates, stood. They were facing out, looking over the pool and chatting. Once in position, I bent down to tie my shoelace, and as I stood, I pretended to overbalance due to the additional weight of the battery pack at my waist. I went to grab the person in front of me and then bumped into one of the bully boys, who then stepped forward himself but into thin air and dropped and slid down the slide straight into the water below. Now, Your Eminence, at this point, I was both elated and also disappointed, as I'd only managed to get one of the boys to fall. However, okay. This quickly turned to full-on mirth, as everyone turned to see what the noise was and started laughing at the boy now treading water in the pool below. I was, in truth, feeling very proud of myself at this point, especially as in the melee, I had managed to sidestep back into the crowd of boys, leaving no evidence of who had done what. This, however, is not the end of the tale, as it now takes a disturbing and therapy-requiring turn. As I mentioned before, there was a hole to the outside world above us, and this hole, as it turned out, had claimed a victim of its own, because as the boy spluttered around, his thrashing must have dislodged the body of a poor, unsuspecting
sheep
that had fallen through the hole at some previous point and unfortunately drowned in the pool and sunk. This body, the sheep's body, now popped up not 5 feet from the boy, who quite rightly thought he was now part of some Freddy Krueger type horror movie. At the sight before us, everyone stopped laughing and started screaming. It subsequently took the adults in the group a good 15 minutes to regain calm control of the group and fish the now hysterical boy out of the pool. This debacle led to the entire potholing trip being cut short. Before your greatness is past judgment, I need to further confess that there were no repercussions from the debacle due to the incredulous appearance of the sheep. The boy in question was certainly not himself for the remainder of our trip, which was appreciated by all. However, he did return to his old ways once we got back to school. I therefore ask for, not for forgiveness of the incident itself, but for any continuing trauma caused by the appearance of the poor deceased sheep, of which I'm sure there is some, as I still think about it 30 years later. Please spare a thought and prayers for the main protagonist in this situation, albeit unwittingly, poor Dolly the sheep, who gave her life to bring this story to life. Amen. Yours in supplication. The Master Chief. Well, I mean, it was quite an interesting tale anyway, when the bully boys, or one of them, had descended into this potholing lake. I mean, that was terrifying enough. But then to dislodge the body of a dead sheep just emerging inches from your face, Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, Master Chief, do you know what? I was with you for quite a while through this because, you know, nobody likes a bully. And, you know, it's not fair. But then the poor sheep, and I know you didn't cause the sheep. I definitely didn't expect it. And I guess, it's a tricky one. But I think I might forgive.
Really? You're softer than Holly. I think motherhood has softened you. All right.
I think I always was soft.
Okay. Okay, so forgiveness, Brother Matthew.
Well, yes, I mean, I'm going to forgive, but, I mean, obviously I had no control over the dead sheep suddenly appearing, although that is, as you say, like a scene from a horror movie, that, goodness me. And taking your revenge during a potholing trip, yes. Really? I mean, there's a few things that could go wrong. I mean, this is clearly different times. Are you still doing school trips on potholing? That seems like a recipe for disaster. So, yes, I'm going to forgive. I mean, everyone came out of it well, apart from the sheep, but, you know, the sheep had already died. Circle of life.
Registered quite regularly now.
So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Okay.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Matty sends in today's... This is a really... period technology is very much front and centre.
Oh, right, OK.
If Holly was here, we'd have to explain a lot of this. I was 13 years old and it was early 1986. Looking out of my bedroom window at the weather, a typical wintry, rainy day in northeast England, I decided that today was better as a stay-at-home day rather than a sit-at-school-in-damp-trousers day. My mam shouted up the stairs that it was time to get up. If I didn't want to be late for school, it was now or never, with a plan formulating in my head, actually. I went to the bathroom, sat down on the toilet, lid down, and shouted back at my mother that I had a poorly stomach and was now beginning to feel the beginnings of something unpleasant. My mam didn't believe me, obviously, as you don't, and I heard her stomping up the stairs only to stop outside the locked bathroom and continue to ask what was exactly wrong with me. With the aid of several sound effects, shampoo bottles being squeezed, the toothbrush cup pouring water down the sink, and some others I was able to provide, I was able to convince her that I was in the midst of a spot of trouble once again. There was no way I could go to school fizzing and gurgling like that. Mam agreed, and I heard her say that I'd have to stop off school and she would have to leave now to go to work, says not to be late for her bus. With the sound of the front door closing, I peeked outside the bathroom to check that the coast was clear. It was. So I headed downstairs to turn the fire on and the TV on. Mid-80s morning telly wasn't that good. It was a thing called school's television, where lessons and lectures were broadcast in the hope that this could then be shown in classrooms and give the teachers a break. But hey-ho, I was off school, watching TV, and not sat in damp trousers in the school. This led on to the moment of my undoing, the reason behind me asking for forgiveness, even if you regard faking the upset stomach. You know, I mean, that's bad enough, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They say, Father Simon, they say idle hands are the devil's workshop, Proverbs 16:27, and I am testament to that statement. As I sat in front of the fire watching school's television, I glanced upon my mother's sewing tin. The lid was popped, and I was soon fingers deep in bobbins of multicoloured thread, buttons, press studs, and a very shiny red horseshoe magnet. What fun it was picking needles up with the magnet, and then trying it on the sewing tin lid. This indeed was a powerful magnet. It also worked on the sitting room door handle, as well as Dad's pen that he'd left by the telly. I wonder what it would do to the television.
Oh no.
So I brushed the magnet across the TV screen, and suddenly, where there'd been a man sitting behind a desk doing a lecture, there was now a big purple smudge. Wikipedia tells me that this was something to do with me disrupting the electrons in the cathode ray tube, or something like that. A big purple smudge, which I hoped could be reversed by brushing the magnet the other way. The purple smudge now got bigger, and it was a big splodgy stripe across the centre of the screen. And when I decided to use the magnet like an eraser thing, there was now diagonal stripes. The whole screen had turned purple. And that was when I saw my mother walking past our front door. And panic set in. The telly was switched off, the sewing tin lid went back on, and I made a beeline for upstairs and back into bed. That's the second time that bus hasn't turned up this week. I'll have to ring in work and tell him I'll be late. Are you okay, son? I heard a call from downstairs. I'm a bit better, Mum, thanks, I answered back. Oh, that's good, she replied. Oh, well, I might as well stay and have a cuppa and watch a bit of telly until the next bus is due, says Mum. I heard the TV being switched back on. I heard the volume from the school's television programme I'd been watching a minute or so ago. But then I heard my mum. What's up with this thing? Have you touched anything downstairs? I'll try unplugging it, seeing if that makes it better. Anyway, so my mum unplugs the telly, but it was no good, made no difference. The purple splodgy screen I'd left had not mysteriously repaired itself. In fact, when the repairman came to look at it, he said that the only telly he'd seen like this before was the one time he got called into a school where their television had been too close to their Van de Graaff generator.
Oh,
let's hear it for the Van...
Yes.
Suddenly, lots of 70s kids are punching the air.
Yes.
Let's hear it for the Van de Graaff generator. Prog band as well.
Yeah.
Mam claimed for a new telly on our home insurance and got a bigger, newer unit, much better than the previous one I'd experimented on. She even bought us our first video recorder from the same shop, so she was happy, and everything was fine. As for me, my dicky belly cleared up the very next day, surprisingly, after the guilt of breaking our television gave me a big enough jolt not to do this sort of thing again. It's more than 40 years since I broke this television, and in this time I've only disclosed this tale to my partner and a recently retired work colleague. Father Simon and members of the congregation, after 40 years of holding on to this crime, do you think you could possibly forgive me? Well, I don't know about that. 40 years? Is that beyond the statute of limitations for confessions? I don't know. Let's check it. So it's Matty's confession. Let's hear it for the cathode ray tube and the Van de Graaff generator. Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, when I was little, we had a really big television in our... not big screen, but just it was like a brick.
Enormous.
Yeah, it was huge. And my dad wouldn't let anyone go near it or touch it. So if this had happened in our house, my dad would have not been happy. However, I don't know what to do. She got a bigger and a better one, which kind of makes me want to forgive him. But He did go through a sewing box, and I bet that was a mess. So therefore, if someone had done that to my sewing box, I wouldn't be happy. So I'm not going to forgive.
Okay, brother from another.
So I'm definitely going to forgive, and there's so many reasons why. Number one, I mean, didn't they learn a lesson with the magnet? It's almost like a physics lesson, isn't it?
Yes.
The electromagnetic force with the magnet and the TV screen
and the
cathode ray tube. So that's one. Number two, they get a new telly, a better telly, and they get a video recorder in 1986. That's amazing. But also, I'm definitely going to forgive just for the foresight in using shampoo bottles to simulate toilet trouble. That sounds fabulous. Well done. I'm going to remember that one. So definitely forgiven.
Did you have a Van de Graaff generator at school, Susie? Had they expired by the time you went through your education?
I don't think we did, no.
Basically, a large silver ball and a larger silver ball next to it. Then you turn a handle and then sparks will jump from one to the other. Did you have one?
Yeah, definitely.
Turn a handle, it was fantastic. You could put your hands on one of the globes as the handle was turned and then your hair would stand up.
Yeah, we did have one actually.
All perfectly safe. And then Van de Graaff Generator became a prog band. We should dig out many and many of their tracks. I'm going to give them. Martin Kemp could play them on a Friday night.
Absolutely. Loads of sub 3 minute tracks by Van de Graaff Generator, aren't there?
So, Confessions from the Crypt. Here we go. Time to resurrect another old classic here from the archives. Marie in St. Albans, thank you for sending us this. Simon, Matt, sisters Holly, Susie, novice Nige, and the team. How excited I was to hear that you would be bringing back the podcast. As a long-time listener of Confessions, it's wonderful to have them all neatly wrapped up for some giggles at the weekend. Long may it continue. One of my recent favourites was a confession about a guy who convinced his friend he could take photos on his phone using his voice, which you probably can now, but this was a few years ago. Not only did it make me howl with laughter at the time, but I was also able to repeat the prank on my husband David during a holiday in Portugal, something we still laugh about now. Best wishes, Marie. So, do you remember this one?
Yes, this does ring a bell, yeah. Okay.
Wasn't it the guy in the... weren't they on a biking holiday and didn't he just point and just go, click?
Let's find out together. We've tracked this one down, recovered from an old USB stick this very morning. Bernard's Tale, which we called at the time, Everybody Must Say Cheese, Cheese.
Something to confess. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's comes from Bernard. All right, Bernard. Father Simon and the forgiving crew. My tale goes back a few years to when I was running a cycling B&B in the Veneto region of northern Italy. During our 10 years of running the B&B, we had visitors from all over the world, from places as diverse as Australia, Canada, many parts of Europe, and, of course, America. Around 2017, I actually had a group of friends staying with me from my native northeast of England, which is quite a relief from some of the groups of needy and somewhat incompetent American riders, some of whom could hardly change gear and had propensity for dressing in very loud cycling shirts. This opening bout of xenophobia over, we move on. Needy American cyclists,
right.
Eh?
Okay.
So there we were, a group of six friends out riding in perfect weather in some of the most stunning cycling locations known to man. Our ride for the day was a nice warm-up along the valley floor before taking on the 11-kilometre climb to the beautiful little mountain town of Castello Ticino for some well-deserved espresso and gelato. The climb was typically Italian, with lots of hairpin bends and great views along the way. At around the halfway point, there was a particularly beautiful viewpoint where I usually stopped with guests for the obligatory photo opportunity. As we all lined up with our phones and cameras, I took out my phone, which had a function on it, where instead of pressing a button to take a picture, you only had to say, cheese, and the camera would take the picture. At this point, I did a little bit of research and found out this is definitely true. It's a Samsung Galaxy that has this feature.
You say cheese and it takes a picture.
Agreed.
And
yes,
so
that's
just
what happened.
Pressing a button.
Quite a bonus feature for a non-fruit-based device, says Bernard. We all lined up on the bridge overlooking the view to the valley below. I called out cheese and my phone clicked, taking the photo. I then noticed my friend, we'll call him Bob, do a quick double take, looking at me in amazement and said, how did you do that? Seeing which way this was heading and knowing that his fruit-based phone didn't have this function, I said, oh, you just turn on your camera, you point to what you want it to take a photograph, and you just shout, cheese. Oh, cool, said Bob. Immediately held up his phone to take a picture. Cheese, he said. Of course, nothing happened. Bob looked a bit disappointed. Try a bit louder. Maybe it's volume related. I said, cheese! Bob shouts, no avail. But this time the rest of the lads are cottoning on. Mate, a little bit louder. Cheese! The mightiest cheese of all time. It echoes down the valley, but still nothing. I know what it might be. I said, we're in Italy. Try formaggio. Because it might adapt straight away. You know, it changes to the Italian phone company. Yeah. Anyway, so we do the whole thing. Formaggio! Still nothing. Biting my lip, I say, bit louder.
Oh, no.
And so on. The most thunderous formaggio resounding down the valley, bouncing off cliff walls. Birds took to the air. Other land-based creatures bolted for cover. Maybe it's made in Germany. Try Kaza. Maybe it's made in China. Chisu. Maybe it's Swedish. Ost. Maybe it's a Spanish phone.
Queso.
There you go. Try that. Queso. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Strange. I said that function must be turned off. You'll have to go into your settings, Bob, yeah, to activate. We don't have time. We've got to saddle up. Come on. Bob, by now, puce of face and sweating with all the shouting, forlornly put his phone away. Later that evening, he spent an epic session in his phone settings looking for the cheese function that just wasn't there. He even tried the voice activating thing. Siri, find me cheese.
Find me cheese.
Father Simon, I would like to ask forgiveness. Firstly, from Bob, who never did access the cheese function despite many, many hours of scrolling through his settings. Secondly, for terrifying the wildlife of northern Italy, already have enough to contend with Italian hunters taking pot shots at them, which sounds like another story altogether.
Yes, it does. Okay.
And also to the cheese sellers of many nearby mountain farms who must have been preparing tables full of locally made cheese in anticipation of very hungry travellers who sounded mad for a bit of formaggio or queso. Or cheese soup, or just cheese. Anyway, Bernard it is sending in tonight's tale. What do we say to Bernard for apps? He was a little bit cruel, maybe, on his friend Bob. He never explained to Bob he just had the wrong phone, which didn't have the right function. Sister Susie from the pub.
Oh, Bernard, that really, really, my cheeks are hurting. That was very, very funny. I don't think there was any malice in it. And after the evening of spending looking for the cheese function, he probably did tell him, hopefully, or someone did, that it was the wrong phone. So I feel like that was just a bit of a laugh. We all had a giggle. What's the harm? I'm going to forgive.
Okay, looking good for Bernard. What do you say, Matthew?
Well, obviously that got very Dole Mio advert midway through that, didn't it? Bob, it doesn't strike me as the brightest individual. Controversial, I know, but I don't think he is. The best bit of that is Bob spending the evening going through his settings.
Cheese.
Trying to find,
I need some cheese.
Find my cheese. Someone is writing that app. Even as we speak. So I'm going to forgive because, you know, we've all got a friend who, bluntly, not the sharpest tool. And if you're going to have them shouting cheese into the valley, then you're going to take it. So, yeah, definitely forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
So that was a particularly good one. Thank you very much for Marie for writing in. That one, where Dolmio, they're the pizza sauce people, aren't they?
They are, yes. I think that was a reference to your fabulous accents.
Yes.
That you just, just chameleon like turn into somebody from Italy.
Of course. I really like Dolmio pizza sauces.
Do you?
Yes.
This is a late bid for some sponsorship, is it?
They're very robust. I find
pasta robust.
Yes, a robust pasta sauce with lots of sun-dried tomato and
why do you need warmth. Why do you need it to be robust? It's a sauce.
A robust sauce
can't be robust.
It can be thin and feeble.
Okay.
Nobody wants a thin and feeble sauce. You want a robust,
a robust
pasta sauce.
Oh.
And I find Dolmio are my favourite.
Maybe have they not made enough of the fact that they're robust? Maybe you should have
just a
robust Simon Mayo.
Yes.
On the front.
If it's robust,
front of Dolmio.
If it's robust pasta that you want, Dolmio is the brand for me. It also tastes very nice.
Yes.
And reasonably priced.
Well, no, you're reining it back now. You're reining it back. The robust was enough. That was enough.
Anyway.
If you have a request for a classic confession that you'd like to hear again, or indeed you work for Dolmio and you want to...
yes, please do send us some
give
Dolmio.
Us the correct advertising slogan. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Wrapping up this week's service, as always, Brother Matt with the secret code phrase. Brace yourselves.
Well, it was going to be something about robust Dolmio. But no, we're going to go back with Fluffy Fanny, I think, and have loads of people sending that to your social media accounts over the weekend.
I'll get closed down. Okay. Well, if you've listened this far, you can tweet me at Simon Mayo on Twitter /X. Or Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads, also, of course, on Blue Sky.
Also the Blue Sky, let's not forget that. Yeah.
Finally, don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe, and keep telling everyone that the Simon Mayo Confessions podcast is actually back. Until next time, from the pub, Sister Susie.
Ta-ta.
From the gutter, Brother Matthew.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Why?
Yeah, no, I'm going through the Sound of Music thing. I'm going to do them all. It's going to be like a collection. So by the end of it, you're going to be able to add them all up. And it'll be like that song from Sound of Music, where they're all on the stairs in the house.
Okay.
So long, farewell. That's the one.
Our feed is in, adieu.
Goodbye, yeah.
Okay. And you?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.